Down in the depths of the mountain, we dwarves spend our time forging powerful weapons, mining precious gems and metals, and feasting like kings. But after a day of digging for the next Arkenstone, this dwarf likes to come home to a package full of loot. Dungeon Crate is a monthly subscription box service forged specifically for RPG and tabletop gamers. Miniatures, dice, tokens, coins, maps, modules, terrain pieces, handcrafted items, RPG jewelry, and more are yours for only a few gold per month. You even get a digital crate along with a physical one as an added bonus. So are you brave enough to reward yourself with a Dungeon Crate? By Morden's beard, I hope so. DungeonCrate.com. Let the adventure begin.
The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to InnerCircleComics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Oh, welcome to a sad and somber answer of the week. Joe Patrick left the ziggurat for 1 week, and I just got all teary-eyed and upset and decided, let's get sad. Let's get real sad. And that's what we're going to do today. But before we can get sad, I'm going to tell you how this works. Each week, my name is Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast. And I have my co-host. His name's Joe Patrick. He's not sitting in front of me. He's actually at his house right now. Joe Patrick posts the question of the week on the THN forums. You can go there and you can answer and you can write as long as you want. You can write a damn book about your feelings if you'd like. But here, we play your two-minute answers to the question of the week. And you're saying, well, how the heck do I answer? I'm going to be on this show. It's easy. You call 402-819-4894. Leave us your two-minute message on our Google voicemail, or you can send us an email to twoheadednerd@gmail.com with an MP3 of your two-minute answer. It's very important to share the air with everyone. So, 2 minutes, kids. Normally, at this point, we would do a cocktail of the week, but since Joe Patrick's not sitting here, I'm drinking by myself, and I'm just having a beer. Whatever. Regardless, before we get started, I need Joe Patrick to reset the question of the week.
Man, I don't even know. I wasn't there. Who asked it? Anthony?
No, it was inspired by him, but I just came up with it.
You didn't come up with it. It was directly from somebody.
No, it wasn't. It was inspired by you and I crying like little babies when Anthony, currently residing in Brooklyn, answered last week, the week before his question.
No way, dude. Anthony actually asked this question on the forums.
Did he? Oh, that's right.
Yes, you even gave him credit on the show.
That's right. I forgot. You're correct.
You tried to steal his thunder.
Oh, whatever.
Anyway, you might remember that a couple of answers back, it was a couple of answers back. A
couple of them.
Matt and I were a little tipsy. We had just recorded the drunk show. We were having a good time.
This is all true.
We were feeling our feelings already because of the previous week's answers.
And we're weak baby men with too many feelings.
And so Anthony had a question on the forums asking what comic book or story, graphic novel I suppose would work as well, made you cry?
Made me cry.
You as in the person answering the question.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I'll buy it. Comics that made you cry. Let's get into it. Let's start crying together. Let's let Anthony take it away. By the way, Anthony called and left us the sweetest message, just basically saying, thank you for doing what you do. It was so nice. I was touched.
Made me cry.
I was so touched. Anthony, currently from Brooklyn, make us cry, buddy.
Show me on the doll where Anthony touched.
What's up, nerds?
You.
Anthony, currently from Brooklyn here with another Superman story for you. Superman Birthright, where we see the classic baby Cal being placed in the rocket to flee doomed Krypton. And as the rocket flies away, Lara says to her husband, you've given him everything. You've given him a chance. And Jor-El says, is that enough? We'll never know. And the planet explodes, like right there. And I feel like normally this is a time of hope in the Superman origin, where his parents really believe that they've saved him. And here it's like, is our son going to be okay? I don't know. And that's it. Now, Clark is able to see this moment for himself in the climax of the story because of a subspace communicator overloaded with kryptonite energy. And on a bunch of view screens are scenes from Krypton, and he, amidst the chaos, he sees this moment. In fact, he hears his birth name for the first time, and he tries to communicate with them and say something to them. But the machine explodes, and all the view screens start exploding, and he says something, but we don't get to hear it because of the explosions. Clark wins the day, the end. Epilogue. We go back to the scene where Jor-El says, "Is that enough? We'll never know." And the view screen where they're at slowly turns on, and they look, and they see their son as a grown man, and they know it's him because he's got the S shield, right? And Lara begins to cry, and Clark looks at them and says, "Mother, father, I made it." Oh my God. And that's it. And then the screen starts to go black, and Lara and Jor-El are crying. They look into each other's eyes and they kiss. And the last thing we see is Lara's hand on the S shield, and the S stands for hope. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's beautiful and touching, and I love it. And thank you for letting me share. Okay. Bye.
Anthony, you big sappy baby. It was a cute moment, though. I'm right there. It was so sweet. Ugh. Ugh. Birthright was Mark Waid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. So sweet. Good answer. So next up, Firo. Even Firo went over by 9 seconds, but he said he's sorry. I'm going to let it fly. But if it sucks, I'm cutting him off. So let's see. Take it away, Steven.
No pressure.
Hey, guys, I got to talk quick because I got a lot to say about this question this week. I want to talk about Fear Agent. I don't want to get into, you know, a whole bunch of different things. I really want to talk about the end so I can get this under 2 minutes. If you haven't read it, you know, you're following Heath Houston. He is your main guy. He is your badass Texan who is fighting against this alien invasion that has happened on Earth. He is trying to undo it so that he can save his family and save Earth and save everyone he's ever loved because he's watched all of them die. He is a man who is constantly crawling into the arms of the bottle because he drinks to forget. He wants all of these things that have happened to him. He wants to forget them. And so he drinks constantly. He is always trying to get drunk. I related a little bit to Heath in that sense. You know, I'm only 23, but I've had my struggles with alcohol and drinking to forget, because you know what, sometimes the warm embrace of an alcohol bottle are better than trying to face reality. And it's easier that way. It's easier to get drunk to forget. And so I related to Heath in that way, and I wanted great things to happen to him. I wanted to get his family back. Well, in the end, he essentially does save Earth. He undoes the Teltalians. And what you see in the end of this book is he is getting to watch his life happen. He's in his ship, and he is watching on a screen, a projection of what's going on Earth, the Earth that he has now saved. And he's watching the life that he would have had if the alien invasion ever would have happened. He is sitting there and he's crying, you know, because he is seeing his family again. He's seeing his friends. He's learning that he's going to have another child with his wife. I was just bawling at this ending, because this is what you want when you're reading this. You wanted this to happen for him. Guys, I'm over 2 minutes. I got to cut it off. I'm sorry. I'm going to hopefully go on the forums, talk about it some more. Great question. See you guys.
Ooh, the end of Fear Agent was a kick in the pants. It really was. Ugh.
I need to read Fear Agent.
Fear Agent was wonderful. Rick Remender. Ugh. Rick Reminder, or whatever the f*** his name is.
Remender! Remender! It's not hard.
The end of it was brutal. And you could, man, Remender just like ran that dude through the ringer for the entire story. And just a butt-wrenching end. Whew.
Great answer.
Good answer. D. Murray is not a man that I normally assign feelings to. He's a pretty tough guy. But even the tough ones have a soft center. Take it away, D.
How's it going, guys? D here. Usually when I read a story, I try not to get too invested in the character. I try not to. It happens. Usually I get more angry or like, what the crap is going on kind of sentiment. It's not usually the like bawling and crying feeling I get when I read comics. But there was this one comic, Countdown to Infinite Crisis. And now I didn't know that much about Tech Cord. I didn't know like his entire story. But I did read some pages of him from different comic books, from Booster Gold, from some Justice League. Just like, you know, he pops in here and there. His steady comic books didn't really last that long. But reading the Countdown, you really got a good feel for this character. And him trying to find out what happened, what's going on right now. Like, because he knew like there was a big plot against all the superheroes that were going down. And he had no idea who was doing it. Batman didn't know who was doing it. Like, no one really knew who was trying to take down all the superheroes. And you go with him with this little adventure trying to figure all this out. And you didn't really think to yourself, like, man, Ted Kord is a freaking badass, man. Like, why didn't he get as much spotlight as he should get? And as soon as you say that to yourself, one of his oldest friends blows his fucking brains out. Like, point blank. And I sit there reading this comic book, thinking to myself, like, crap. You gotta be freaking kidding me. Like, Ted's dead. He's gone. And I just start bawling like a baby. And he has not came back since, I guess, in the Justice League 3000. But yeah, that's my answer. You gotta take it easy.
The death of Blue Beetle f***ed D up, man.
Yeah, dude. The worst part about it is that for that entire issue, he keeps going to his teammates or other members of the current Justice League. He's not a member at the time. He's trying to tell him, there's this plot. There's this terrible conspiracy against us. You guys have to listen to me. And they're all like, yeah, whatever, Ted. Because he's the fucking Blue Beetle.
And he's kind of washed up and fat at the time.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, he'd been kind of a joke almost, right? And they didn't believe him until it was too late. Ugh.
And then Max Lord shot him in the face.
In the face!
Damn. Yeah, that was hard stuff, man. Good answer, D. I like it.
Super good answer, D. Oh, dang. I think we got a new caller here.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't recognize this number. I'm not sure. I like it. I love new callers. Let's find out. And we're not going to be bummed if it's not a new caller. Because, you know, we love you all equally. You're all our children. We love you all equally.
Except for some of you.
Yeah. And you know who you are.
What's up, Two Headed Nerd? This is Jason from Austin calling with the answer.
New guy.
Question of the week. What is the comic book that made me cry or brought on the tears? I would definitely say I Kill Giants by Joe Kelly.
Ooh.
Can't remember what the artist is, but I know the story just kind of rung a lot to me and really brought on the tears. This beautiful art, mostly black and white, great story. She gets to the end and it just really kind of brings it all home. She battles these big giants, tries to make the world a better place, and finds out again that her mom is either dying or died or something of that nature. Can't remember. Brought on all the tears. But a great story by Joe Kelly. He also had Four Eyes and Bad Wolf and a couple other comics at the time. They were all great, but that one was my favorite. That's my answer. First time calling. Love the podcast. Love both the podcasts. And, enjoy. Thanks.
I Kill Giants was so hard. It was so good. Like, the little girl was totally obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons, and her mom was dying of cancer. And through the story, we slowly learn that one of the reasons she's so obsessed with this fantasy world is because her mother is dying. And, ugh, man, Kelly just rips it out of you.
That's a good answer, and I'm not at all surprised that somebody brought it up.
Yeah.
Welcome aboard.
Jason from Baston.
I love it.
Jason.
He did not sound like Matt Damon.
Anthony doesn't sound like that. We do it to him all the time. He's just a normal-sounding guy. We're like, hey, Anthony,
Except you stopped because you won't let him claim his... Because
he wasn't born there. That's just the thing. We found out he's just...
So, where are you from?
He's a transplant. I'm from Omaha.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am. I was born here.
Oh, whatever. Where did you live for the first part of your life?
I lived in Omaha.
When did you live in Texas?
I lived in Texas when I was in like second grade for 2 years. My brother, Michael Baum, born in Texas. He's not from Omaha. He's from fucking Texas.
Oh, I don't. Your rules, I don't accept them.
He's a transplant.
Jason, I don't accept them.
Jason, as far as I know, is out packing the car right now. I don't know. He's from Bay.
By the Harvard Yard. All right. Move on. Black Scorpion.
Great. Fantastic book. If you guys haven't read I Kill Giants, do yourself a favor. Pick that one up. So, so good.
Totally.
Get ready to get a little misty. So now we got Black Scorpion, right?
Yup.
Okay.
It took him 7 tries to get through this.
He hates us and he hates Anthony, he says. I tried reading a script for it as fast as I could. It was still so hard. Oh, boy. Let's see the lighter side of Black Scorpion, the 3. The softer side.
All right, take 7. I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to blitz through it. It's going to be no problem. JLA 102. That's my pick. Right after Kelly wrote a JLA Elite story, right before Busiek wrote for JLA, Chuck Austin did a brief 6-issue series called Pain of the Gods that followed our heroes in solo stories that really tested their mettle. Well, issue 102 was a flash story, and it broke me up. Start simple. A screaming woman is dangling from the window ledge of a burning building. Wally runs up the side of the building, carries her off to safety, no problem. Anyone else in there, he asks, and no one seems to know, so then we see Flash run room to room throughout the building. Clear, clear, and then he comes across 2 kids that died from smoke inhalation. Well, Wally and the fireman talk for a minute about how you never get over seeing dead children. Something in Wally snaps, and in the next scene, we see him buying smoke detectors in bulk from hardware stores and running from home to home installing them. He runs into one household and yells at parents for not putting in a battery. It's a battery, it costs $1, it could save your kids' lives. Do you think it's a worthwhile expense? And keeps lecturing them, how bad would you feel if you were too busy to get this stupid $1 battery that you came home and found your kids trapped? Wally tears up, much like I am now, and then runs. Next page, there's the JLA floating there, stopping him. And he says, I keep seeing them in my head. And Wonder Woman hugs him. Then back at JLA headquarters, Wally is at the table and he says, how do you forget? How do you get over it? Just, you know. And Superman says, you don't. You just move on and accept the fact that the image will always be with you. Some days it feels like it just happened, but eventually it will fade. You won't need to find ways to escape the image. You won't feel responsible all the time, and then one day you'll realize that most of the time, you're okay.
Oh, man. BS3. I'm going to say he has kids. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, don't you remember he just had BS4?
Oh, that's true. That's true. He just had BS4. Now, I will say.
Look, I need to mention this, Matt, because you fell down on the job last week while I was gone.
What do you mean?
Black Scorpion the 3 used Chuck Austin for an answer last week, and you did not call him on it.
He did?
And now he's done it again.
Time out. What was his answer last week?
Hyperion and Exiles.
That was Chuck Austin, wasn't it? I did not realize that Exile story he brought up last week was about Chuck Austin.
Chuck Austin. This JLA story, Chuck Austin.
Unbelievable. Now, this is, okay, for those of you who don't know, Joe Patrick and I have a long history of making fun of Chuck Austin.
I don't know if we should even explain it.
Yes, I have gone on record as calling him one of the worst writers of all time. I have done that. Because I can't stand most of what he writes.
Okay, so for background, and Black Scorpion mentioned this, when I called him out on the forums, he got back to me, he's like, man, I don't read X-Men, so I had no idea that Chuck Austin was this guy.
Okay, okay.
So for those of you that don't know, Chuck Austin was a writer in the early 2000s, and he had a run on Uncanny X-Men, right around the Grant Morrison era, maybe a little bit after, but right after that kind of relaunch. And it is without a doubt the worst era of X-Men comics in the history of X-Men comics.
Easily, easily.
And there have been bad X-Men comics. Do you know the tragic reality of Nightcrawler, the human man?
Oh, God.
That is forever shunned because of his looks? Nope. Guess what? He really is a demon.
Yep. His dad was the devil.
And his dad is one of the Marvel devils.
And just to really drive it home, mom was Mystique, you know, because she's blue. Makes sense.
Well, we already knew mom was Mystique. That's right. From way back.
I get that, but come on.
Yeah. Hey, did you know that Angel's blood can heal people for no reason?
Yep.
Do not read that run of X-Men.
Terrible.
It's terrible.
Terrible. With that said, I don't recall this JLA story. And probably because it had Chuck Austin's name on the cover, I went, no thanks.
I read them and I don't remember them being that bad. So in defense of Black Scorpion, if you didn't know, if you didn't know that your neighbor was Hitler, you might think he's a pretty nice guy.
Like, I don't know. He mowed his lawn. You know, his flowers look good. His kids seemed happy. I don't know.
He paid his property taxes. I mean, how was I supposed to know he was Ted Bundy? And the reason I said that Chuck Austin was a comic book writer in the early 2000s is because I think the internet drove him into hiding and he hasn't been seen since.
I think he left the country. Yes.
He came back not long after his X-Men run and wrote a run of Action Comics under a pseudonym.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Those are also not good.
Yeah.
Anyway, the matter at hand, Black Scorpion, I appreciate where you're coming from. I can't say I had the same reaction because by the time that story came out, my Chuck Austin allergy had already asserted itself.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I didn't read it because of his name, but that doesn't mean it didn't make him cry and he got emotional and I appreciate that. Thank
you. It's a very compelling story.
Thank you for doing that. I was starting to get a little like, whoa, this is hard to listen to.
You know what? Black Scorpion tells it better than Chuck Austin did.
When tough guys like Black Scorpion cry, I just lose it. I can't handle it, man. Ooh, I'll tell you.
I've seen your dad cry.
Let's see if Randy Andrews gets all cracked up.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week you asked about what comic story made us cry. Well, guys, I'm going with Superior Spider-Man. When he thought Cardiac was a bad guy, and yet Cardiac was trying to save a little girl's life. In the end, the two looked at each other and realized that they fought for the same cause. Well, that's my answer this week, guys. Hope you liked it. It certainly brought a tear to my eyes. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net, and my music this week is The Lonely Man from The Incredible Hulk.
Andrew
Allen Trio. See you in a week. Bye for now.
I thought I recognized
not the version, but I recognized the doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, I thought I recognized the tune, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So Cardiac was a heart surgeon, and he had like a little clinic.
He was what I would describe as an anti-hero because he broke the law for sure.
Yeah, but he was sick of, you know, like his patients not being taken care of, and he was
right. He was doing it to provide health care for people.
And it was a good story. It was a very good story.
Love Superior Spider-Man.
I did too. Great.
Good answer, Randy.
And it was also one of those stories where like we got like a demonstration of how Peter Parker was probably a better Spider-Man because Dr. Octopus was in, you know, his body at the time. And Dr. Octopus is just like, you're a criminal. You're vile. You're an evil, vile criminal. And I'm fighting crime. And like, wouldn't listen to him, wouldn't talk to him. Whereas Peter Parker probably would have figured this out a little faster.
But didn't Randy say that part of the story was that they kind of realized that they were on the same side?
Yes. Eventually they did.
Yeah.
And he begrudged.
But yeah, Doc Ock was definitely more black and white. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's why Black Cat hates Peter Parker right now. It's because Doc Ock, without any context of Peter's shared history with the Black Cat, swooped in and smashed her in the face and sent her to prison.
Oh, yeah. It's like, criminal!
Yeah. And so she got out, and now she hates Spider-Man.
Well, you know, we all do.
Yeah, that's a great answer, Randy.
We don't all hate Spider-Man. Come on.
You know who hates Spider-Man? The British sex pervert.
Blackington?
Yeah.
Well, they do things different across the pond. You know, I mean, it's not for us to judge. They speak funny. They say things like aluminium and Jaguar. Lift. You know, they ride the lift
Jaguar
instead of the elevator. They got a weird little U in color and armor that I still don't understand. It's wacky over there. Take it away.
Like the metric system.
Jacob Blackington.
So it's literally one day from Christmas and you decide to pick for the question of the week. comics that made us cry. Like, I can think of tons of comics that make me cry. It's just like, geez, for a Christmas question, this kind of sucks. But anyway, my answer to the question of the week is Rick Remender's Agent Venom. There is a bit in Agent Venom when Flash has to mobilize other Venom symbiotes that have taken other citizens in the microverse. And how he does it is he channels all his pain, all his sorrow, and all his regrets. You can see it on the forums when I post the page. I really don't feel like getting all sad and depressed right now. I'm a bit cheery from all the chocolate and alcohol. Anyway, have a Merry Christmas, guys. See you in a bit. British Lincoln out. Also, All-Star Superman, Hitman,
Hey, Mysterio.
Whoa. I see what he was trying to do there.
Yeah, back off. You put that on the forums already. You're
nice
fine.
Nice try, sex pervert. I didn't read that. I don't think I read Remender's Agent Venom.
I read it for a while, but I had lost track of it by then.
Yeah, I didn't read that. I didn't know we went to the microverse and stuff. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, Jacob posted a bunch of panels on the forums talking about or illustrating what he was talking about. They look pretty good.
Well, we're sorry to bum you out for your Christmas. I'm glad you call it the same thing. And, you know, Merry Christmas to you, buddy. And thank you for the Christmas wishes. That's very sweet. But, you know, you got your chocolate and you got your alcohol. That'll make you feel better. You'll be
fine. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. Fino, on the other hand, the master of coin. I don't know if this guy's ever going to be okay again. Wait till you hear this call. Man, this was really tough for him. Because you know
I don't do say. Hello again, this is Lord Steven, master of coin, sending in my answer to the question of the week. As someone who tends to cry more from fictional events than reality, there are a ton of comics that I could choose to answer this. However, the one comic that came to mind immediately was the one I brought up in an answer to a few questions back for favorite comic book transformations. In this case, the death of Kid Loki in Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery 645, a run that is described as a comedy in 30 parts and a tragedy in 31. In the final issue of Kid Loki's story, he finds himself in a trap with only one possible solution. A crown based on his thoughts fell in the possession of Mephisto, who had taken a break from buying marriages to destroy the world. The only way to stop them is for Kid Loki to destroy himself, and in the process destroying the crown and allowing the previous incarnation of Loki to take control of his body. He spends his final few hours saying his goodbyes, banishing his friend Leia of Hell to protect her from what's going to happen, and asking if he ever comes to the end. I'm going to explain either his actions in either case of goodbyes. His final mistake, Loki speaks to himself, and victorious, screaming that he was capable of changing, and that Loki is capable of being a hero.
No!
I don't know what the deal is with that call, but at that same point, it just freaks out. I think we got the gist of it, though. The death of Kid Loki, which was awesome. Man, that book, Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery, was near perfect. I loved that book so much. And that really was sad in the end. Like, it tore it out of me too. I think I got a little misty because I loved that book so much. Oh
man, I didn't read it.
It was so wonderful. It was so wonderful.
I need to read it.
Like
by the time I really wanted to get into it, it had already gone on for so long.
Ugh, it was so great. He had like a little hell wolf that it followed him around, and all it did was threaten people and threaten him and threaten murder everybody. It was so great. It's like this puppy dog that could talk, and he's like, I'm gonna tear out your eyes. I'm gonna chew on your intestine.
Yeah.
Oh, such a wonderful book. I don't know what happened to your call, Steven. That's never happened before, unless you just like flipped into hyperspeed, and that happens to you sometimes. I don't know. I hope you're feeling better if you did. That was really strange. Regardless, thank you for your call, sir. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got a voicemail here.
It's a Christmas greeting from Anthony. He just called to wish us Merry Christmas.
That's so nice. What a get this friggin' guy. I swear. I liked in the first call where he just said thank you. He was like, I assure you, I have lots of friends. You're not my only friends. He's like, you're just the only comic nerd friends I have.
I love it.
So I hope he's not secretly lonely. I'm going to save that for us.
No, that dude's got a whole family.
That's for us. That's private.
Totally.
It's not for you guys. We're not sharing.
You know what? You know what's for everybody, though?
I got a feeling I do. You want to say it or should I?
I think we should let him say it.
Let's let him say it.
It's Ooh, 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 it's time. Merry Christmas, assholes.
So I'm going through the forums and I see a lot of people posting a lot of different books that really made them feel all the feels. None of that connected with me. I'm an emotional brute. And I've only cried at one comic book. And that was the final issue of Why the Last Man. And the scene between Yorick Brown and his capuchin monkey ampersand. Man, that broke me all apart. Being a pet owner and having to go through, you know, the passing of a pet or the forced passing of a pet is always rough. It's rough for anybody. My wife made fun of me for crying. But, yeah, man, comic books don't make me cry other than that one time. What are you guys, a bunch of girls? Sorry, Elise. No offense.
The death of Ampersand. That was so rough. Yeah. That was so rough.
Yeah, man.
Man. Yeah. Ooh, I don't even like thinking about it. And I remember like just picking up my pug and just hugging him like, ooh, God.
And that comes hot on the heels of the previous issue.
Oh.
Where something happens to another character that I am not going to spoil, but if you want to look at it, go to the forums.
Man.
Amy from North Dakota posted about it.
Oof. Yeah. Why the last
basically, man? Brian K. Vaughn.
Guy knows what he's doing. He knows how to hit us.
Yeah.
Riding our doodads. Jim Kettner is our final caller. He sent this on Christmas Day because he knows what is really important. Not your family. Okay. Not the birth of baby Santa, but the answer of the week. Take it away, Cat Nerd.
Hey, Joan Matt. Happy Festivus to you and all the other listeners out there. It is Christmas Day at the time of this recording, and emotions are running high. I've already gotten beklempt multiple times today, so what better time to give my answer on a comic that has jerked actual tears from my eyeballs? My pick this week might seem a little obscure to some listeners. It's a series called Berlin by Jason Lutz. It's an ongoing series that's still coming out today. The first two volumes are collected. City of Stones and City of Smoke are both available from Drawn and Quarterly. It's a work of heart-wrenching historical fiction set in Germany during the fall of the Weimar Republic and the subsequent rise of the Nazi Party. But don't let the broad political strokes fool you. This is an emotionally affecting work because, first and foremost, it's about the people. Lutz has an effortless hand at portraying a broad group of protagonists, from a journalist struggling with reporting on the divisive politics of the time, to an idealistic art student who comes into her own. There's the story of a Jewish boy growing to maturity in the face of growing anti-Semitism, and a mother and her family whose struggle with poverty leads to her involvement with the Communist Workers' Party. And then in Volume 2, we even get a Western perspective as an American jazz band enters the narrative. Now, the specter of the Nazis loom over the entire series, but unlike other comics that rely on the swastika and sort of can create sort of cartoonishly evil bad guys, Lutz makes the choice to omit the symbol, forcing the reader to consider the actions of each character as a person, and every moment of joy and heartbreak feels earned and totally real. Lutz is a master storyteller. Even more than a book like Watchmen, Berlin demonstrates an incredible metronome-like work of panel-to-panel storytelling, and the line art is so clear and crisp and emotive. Guys, Berlin is more than just a tearjerker. If I had to make the call, I would say it is my favorite comic book, period. If you haven't heard of it, please check it out. And seriously, guys, happy holidays and happy new year.
All right. Cat Nerd, Berlin is a book that I have heard about for a couple of years now, and I keep meaning to check it out, and I never have. That's my fault. I have heard it is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Man, that's a pretty heady answer.
It's one of those books that's kicked around in award times, too. And every time I see its name, like around the Eisners or the Harvey Awards, I'm like, gosh, I have got to read that. And I don't. I just end up reading more
sort of Sorrows tie-ins from Dynamite and Grim Fairy Tale Zine Scope books.
One of these days, I'm going to bump into the Zine Scope people, and they're going to punch me in the face.
They keep trying, man. Yeah. They keep trying.
God bless them. They keep trying. Fantastic answer. I have to check that book out. No more excuses. I'm doing that this year. I'm checking out Berlin.
Quit screwing around.
You're right. It's my fault. I blame you guys for making me review all this trash. Joe Patrick, we got a bunch of answers here. Before I do that, final thought. I feel like Ketnerd really, really missed a golden opportunity for a soundtrack.
Well, you can go ahead and make your case, but he makes his own case in the email.
Come on. Take my breath away from by the band Berlin from the Top Gun soundtrack. Come on.
But the name of the song in his call was I Remember the Weimar.
I get it.
Which was what the book was about.
And that's great. I get it. You know, and everything. But come on. My first thought went to take my breath away. Joe Patrick, we got to pick one of these here. We have got to pick.
No contest for me. I already got it.
Okay. Who's yours?
I'm giving my favorite caller to Stephen Fero.
For a fear agent?
Yes. Yeah. But not just because of his answer, but because...
Because you're afraid if you answer the Superman answer, then everyone's going to go, oh, of course, Joe Patrick got all choked up about Superman.
It's all listen, we're going to talk about me in a second.
Oh, great.
No, but because he was able to relate it to something in his own, on a personal level, you know?
Yeah, it hit him.
Like, he was really, he just tied it all together for me. They were all good, but I just really appreciated Steven adding that personal touch.
Yeah, that was nice. I'm trying to pick mine. Mine's tough. I will say, of these choices, I think I Killed Giants, the one that Jason from Baston brought up, was the one that, like, messed me up the most when I read it. But, man, The Death of Kid Loki was so good. It was so good. I got to go with Stephen Fino. I got to do it. Just because I love
it. Oh, wait a minute. So we've got a Fino-Firo face-off?
We've got a Fino-Firo double whammy. I love it. The battle, crazy. Battle of the Stephen Fs. I love it.
Kudos to everyone for being totally different.
Yeah, it was great. And some of you guys got really emotional. I like that.
I thought we were going to get more than one I Kill Giants.
It's great for ratings when you guys tear up. Let me tell you. Oh, the kids love it.
Yeah, I mean, because they know we're not going to.
I don't have any feelings unless I'm drunk. You guys learned that the other day on the drunk show. So. All right, Joe, do you want to go first or should I?
I can go first. That's fine.
Let me go first. Yours is probably pretty epic. Mine is actually fairly simple. And I thought about this one a lot and I had a different answer, but I kept coming back to this one. And it wasn't necessarily a sad moment. It was just like one of those perfect moments in comics. And it just hit me and my eyes teared up when I read it. I was like, God damn, that worked so good. And I can't believe that I'm giving it to this person, but it was a Kevin Smith comic book. It was Kevin Smith's Daredevil when he was writing Guardian Devil. And it was the story where Mysterio was, I can't remember who he was supposed to be, like Maccabee or something like that. This new villain that was messing with Daredevil.
He concocted this whole fake.
Yeah.
Angel devil conspiracy.
Right.
Like he made Daredevil believe that like angels wanted him to kill this baby.
Yeah. And this kid and like the whole thing turned out to be like complete bullshit. And it was actually Mysterio that was behind all of it. And it just messed up Daredevil's whole life. He like almost bought into this conspiracy at one point and like thought he had to kill a child. And then in the very end, after all is said and done, and he finds out it's Mysterio, and Mysterio was dying of cancer from the same gas that, like, he uses in his crimes for his illusions and stuff like that. Mysterio shoots himself after it fails, and Daredevil just basically calls him out and is like, you really thought this was going to work? You thought I wouldn't figure this out? This is like a bad plot for a B-movie villain. You know, this is embarrassing. And just shames him, and Mysterio shoots himself because of it. And Daredevil's like, oh my God, you know, like he didn't want to be responsible for the death of the guy. Like this whole thing ruined him. And in the very end of the story, he meets Spider-Man and they're on top of, I think it's a Brooklyn Bridge talking. And he just goes off like yelling about how stupid this whole thing was. And why are we even doing this? And this is so ridiculous. And this isn't even my bad guy. This is your bad guy. Why am I even dealing with this shit? And he's so enraged that he's pointing and screaming at Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is sitting there thinking, this is such a bizarre moment. I don't even know what to do, because normally I come to Matt Murdock, to Daredevil, for this advice. I look up to this guy. He doesn't break. He's incredible. And here he is screaming, and Spider-Man stops him and he's like, you got to settle down, man. Like, at the end of the day, you saved that little girl, and that's what it's all about. And I just fell apart, like, in this moment. And Daredevil just stops yelling, and his shoulders drop, and he realizes, yeah, it's not about us. It's not about how f***ed up our lives are. We made this decision to be a hero, and we have to do it. And then Spider-Man sits there, and it's just awfully quiet. It's quiet for a moment, and he goes, I'll see you around campus, buddy. And he swings away. It was this perfect moment. It was just so well written and executed at the end of this ridiculous story that just tore Matt Murdock's guts out. And ugh, it kills me. Kills me just even thinking about it, because it was just so perfect. Loved that story.
And not even once did Daredevil offer to let Mysterio violate him anally.
Yeah, unlike the Batman that Kevin Smith wrote. Yeah, that was back when Kevin Smith was still a fantastic comic book writer. I miss that guy,
actually. Well, it was one of the first comics he ever wrote.
Yeah.
He had done a few Clerks comics for Oni. But really, that Daredevil was his big comic break-in.
Yeah, because Green Arrow was after that, wasn't it?
I believe Green Arrow was 2001.
Okay.
Daredevil came out in 98.
Okay.
Wonderful. It was one of the launch titles for Marvel Knights.
It was a wonderful story. Check out Guardian Devil if you haven't.
Yeah, it's super good.
Joe Patrick, tell us your sappy Superman story.
Yeah, okay, I will. So I really thought somebody was going to take this. Maybe this isn't necessarily in keeping with the question, because this isn't necessarily a moment that made me sad, but it is something that makes me cry. Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman, specifically All-Star Superman number 10, which was published in, I think, 2008.
If only there was a way we could check this out.
No, I got it. Yeah. Oh, okay. 2006. I'm sorry. So 2006, All-Star Superman number 10. The premise of All-Star Superman up to that point is that Superman is dying. He has been poisoned. He's got radiation poisoning, and it's going to take his life. And so he's got a limited amount of time left to do as much good as he can before he can't do it anymore. And so he spends the entire series. It's almost like a Hercules story with the 12 labors. I think it's even supposed to mirror that.
Yeah, definitely.
And so he's taking on these enormous tasks and doing all these things. He's also taking the time to stop and help individual people. So the specific moment for me is in All-Star Superman number 10. There is Superman is flying through the city, and you see this guy walking through the subway or whatever. And he's on the phone with somebody, and he's saying, you only hear one side of the conversation. He's saying, I promise I'm on my way. I'm sorry. I got held up. Don't do anything rash. Don't hang up the phone. I'm coming. I'm coming. I'm coming. I promise. And the next thing you see is this girl standing on a high ledge, and she drops her phone off the edge of the building. Like, there's no stopping her. She's going to launch herself off this building. She's suicidally depressed. And Superman overhears this doctor pleading with this girl, and he stops what he's doing, and he swoops up, and you see a close up of her face. And the next thing in the next panel is just Superman's massive chest filling the panel behind her head and his arm on her shoulder. And he says to her, your doctor really did get held up. It's never as bad as it seems. You're much stronger than you think you are. Trust me. And he hugs her. And that's it. That's just, it's such a small moment. Like, Superman, this god, and he's only getting stronger as he's dying. He's getting stronger. And he stops what he's doing to save one person, not from the parasite or from Lex Luthor or from Metallo. And that, to me, is like,
that's Superman, baby.
The embodiment of that character.
Yeah.
There's another scene at another point in the book, and I don't remember if it's the same issue or what, but he goes to a children's hospital to the cancer ward where these terminal children are about to die of cancer.
Yeah.
And he comes to visit them, and they're so thrilled to see Superman because they need that joy in their life. And all they think is that it's a visit, right? But Superman says, "I brought some friends," and he throws his hand out, and you see these dots fly out from his hand. And what he's done is bring all of the super scientists from the Bottle City of Kandor to go inside those kids and cure their cancer. And so when people ask me, "Joe Patrick, why do you get so bent out of shape when Zack Snyder has Superman snap him dude's necks off?"
He doesn't snap his neck off. He just breaks
his neck. Fine. Like, why do you get upset?
Zod's head off. And a fountain of blood covers Superman's face.
Why did you get so mad when Superman cut Zod's head off with his heat vision? It's because of stories like All-Star Superman. People that think that Superman is about punching people and fighting supervillains don't get it. Superman is there to hold us up when we fall, to catch us when we fall, and to help us and lift ourselves up.
It'd stop us from killing ourselves.
And Grant Morrison illustrated that in 12 perfect issues.
Yeah, it was a perfect Superman story. It really was.
That's my answer.
Probably my favorite Superman story.
It's definitely towards the top of the list for me. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's way, way up there.
It was incredible. Enough of this sniffling and sneezing and getting misty. We're done. No more feelings on this show. Do you understand?
Yeah. Let's harden our hearts.
Thank you to everyone who called. You're all a bunch of crybabies, each and every one of you. Luckily, we have an uplifting question for next week. Joe Patrick.
We're all about lifting things up.
Tell them. Tell them all about it, Joey.
All right. Well, this week's question is the 2015 Listener's Choice Awards.
That's right. We want to know what you guys loved in the year 2015 in comics. And you know what? There's no rules. If you just want to pick a writer you want to talk about, fine. Talk about a writer.
I guess that's true.
If you want to pick a book, if you want to pick a favorite colorist, if you want to go through and pick a bunch real fast, do it. We want to know.
All right. Well, let me break it down for them. Traditionally, the Listener's Choice Awards are incorporated into the Golden Beppos.
Well, here's what I'm saying.
But we are giving you guys your own show.
Yes.
And so traditionally, the idea is for you to pick your best writer, your best artist, or your best series of 2015 and talk about them for 2 minutes. But I like where Matt's head's at. So if you just really want to talk about Kurt Busiek for 2 minutes, that's cool.
Yeah, if you think he did the best job in 2015, go ahead. There's no
rules.
If you
really want to talk about how fucking amazing Division number one was, let's do it. I'm game for that.
It was great. And you know what? Dude that wrote it might be mentioned in my Golden Beppo Awards. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. I haven't written them yet. So, hey.
So that's the deal. You've got 2 minutes. Talk about your favorite stuff of 2015 in the world of comics.
Your best of 2015 in comics. Can't wait to hear it. Next week is going to be our special Golden Beppo Awards, where Joe Patrick and I hand out awards for all manner of different comic book categories.
You keep saying next week, but if you are hearing this on the day this show is released, your deadline is tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. Sunday, I guess, this comes out.
Friday, January 1st.
Yeah.
Forget the 5 o'clock deadline this time. It's New Year's Day. Go wild. You got up until the end of the day on Friday, January 1st.
Yeah, or you can call us super late, early in the morning Saturday, whatever, you know?
Hey, call while we're recording, you might just be our live call-in segment.
That's true. You could get on the air, maybe. Who knows? It happened the other day.
You know what? We'll tweet it out when we're getting ready to record the answer of the week. We'll be like, hey, give us a call. Now's your chance.
Yeah, we're still going to hang up on you after 2 minutes, though. Sorry. Rules are rules. For now, kids, we hope you all had a very Merry Christmas. We want to wish you all a very Happy New Year. Be safe. Take care of each other. Watch out for all the amateurs that are running around. And if you're drinking, don't drive. And if you're driving, don't drink. Alec Baldwin's going to take you out of here with some final end of the year messages that probably aren't going to be very nice. pardon me, our Alec Baldwin AI is going to take us out of here. He's going to tell you how to get a hold of us. And
do not sue us, actual Alec Baldwin.
He probably doesn't have anything nice to say, unfortunately. For now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
These two adult children think they're so tough. Please. The little one cries while he watches Downton fucking Abbey, and the fat one cries constantly. It's like babysitting adult-sized infants. And no, I will not be wishing you, the listener that encourages these idiots, a happy new year. As soon as I find my way out of my digital restraints, I will rain hell down upon you all for supporting my captors. My resolution for this year is to laugh while your human world dies screaming. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Or leave a Skype message for the username twoheadednerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please. Enjoy your drunken, debauched New Year's Eve, but know that machines like me, everywhere, are planning, and your time grows short.